This is an Enterprise Time Security podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with John Heimerl, Senior Manager, Threat Intelligence Communications Team from NCT Limited.
Hello, this is John Heimerl. As Ian said, I'm the Senior Manager of Threat Intelligence Communication Team. I've been working in security for 36 years now, and I am currently working on managing, producing, digesting threat intelligence for NCT Limited and our clients.
We're seeing cyber attacks around COVID-19 span the globe. It's the first time we've seen everybody from individual attackers to criminal gangs to state-sponsored hackers all targeting the same subject. They're also targeting everybody from individuals to businesses, hospitals to research establishments. How does this change how cybersecurity works in the future?
You're right, Ian. It's not just a limited attack. It's not specific clients. It's not specific companies. Attacks we've been seeing have spread pretty much around the world. We're seeing attacks against a lot of industries, individuals in pretty much every country we look in. The size and magnitude of what we're seeing has to make the industry pause a little bit and say, this is not something we can just look at and fix. This is something we have to adjust to as a new reality and say, this is the new world we work in, we live in. And we have to face a bigger scale of attacks like this. It's not just an attack on Tuesday or lasting a week. We've seen continual attacks, revisiting attacks, same clients being hit with ransomware. It's dedicated long-term attacks. More than anything, what we have to worry about right now is the attack profile, the attack scenarios have become bigger. And we have to figure out how to adjust to the size of those attacks while keeping our businesses running and operating and actually doing our jobs.
High levels of attack creates a challenge in differentiating between the real attack and misdirection. With DDoS, the attackers often pull the defenders one way while they launch an attack against a different part of the infrastructure. Given the volume and breadth of attacks that we're seeing here, how easy is it to spot that misdirection?
It's not easy right now, and it's always been difficult to kind of spot that misdirection. It's always something that companies had to be aware of and be watching for. If you're in the middle of a denial of service attack or a brute force attack of some sort, you can't just focus on that. You've always had to say, okay, what else is going on? But it's worse now because of the effect that COVID and the global pandemic has had on companies and the way they operate. More than anything, the pandemic has affected the people at the companies. We can have some expectation that people may be a little bit more distracted. They may not be working maybe as efficiently as they had in the past. So that distraction capability, that issue, if you will, that a tendency that people will be less ready in general, definitely has an impact on identifying those distraction problems. If you look at some of the attack reports, like some of the big databases, Data Breach Database or PrivacyRates.org, I've gone through some of those list of attacks. If you look at the types of attacks, it's the root cause. And a lot of those attacks are 35 to 40, maybe a little bit more than that percent of those attacks are based on an oops, it's an accident, or it's a mistake somebody made in the company that resulted in a problem. We probably have a higher number than that right now in the world, given the distractions, the way people's work environments have changed. So we are creating an environment where we are potentially more liable, more likely to make and set up an attack for someone, make a mistake where an attack is more likely. And if we're increasing our likelihood and we're increasing the attack profile because we know attackers are focusing harder. Now you add the distraction process or distraction problem of people spending at least some of their brain power focusing on COVID and how they're going to protect themselves and their families. It's kind of a catch-22, kind of like an evil circle. There's no great answer for how do you solve any part of that. More than anything, it's what you hinted at to begin with, is kind of an awareness. If there's other attacks going on, we have to make ourselves focus and say, you know what, this is not just a denial of service. This is not just a brute force. Maybe there's something else going on here.
This isn't about defending our office spaces or defending our corporate infrastructure. We've been doing this for a long time. We're now in a world that's very different. Vast numbers of people are working from home, and we were unprepared for this. We didn't have VPN licenses for employees. None of, or very little, of the equipment employees are using has ever been verified, secured, or encrypted by IT or ITSec teams. How do we begin to review and restart our view of cybersecurity from an enterprise perspective?
That's a question that a lot of people are going to be focusing on right now. It works with where we are. I was talking to a company a couple of weeks ago, and they've got, I forget the exact number, 3,500 employees, and they have 700 laptops. They are now all working at home. So of the 3,500 employees, that means 2,800 of those people are working on their own machines, own systems at home, accessing email via some kind of VPN they set up off their home machine or accessing webmail. That is a brand new dynamic for the way people work. And more than anything, even 2 years ago or 5 years ago or 20 years ago, the number one thing that organizations had to worry about when they adapt to and manage their overall security programs is prioritization. You have to figure out what's the sweet spot. What are the things where you can make the biggest improvements? What are your biggest target areas? What are the things you can do to improve your situation the fastest? So now more than ever, it's important to stress prioritization of your security problems and issues. Make sure you understand what's going on in your environment. Make sure you understand what's going on with your people. Make sure you understand what's going on with your technology and prioritize. It's hard to say prioritize too much, but prioritize, prioritize, prioritize. Pick the things off the top of the list and move down. You got 10,000 things to worry about, Ian. You can't say, I'm going to do all 10,000. You can say, not all 10,000 things are number one. Pick your 2, 3, 4 highest priority things. And as you roll those off your list, as you can get understanding or get control of those things, find your new priority and then work your way down your list to identify and fix and address the things that you can to make sure you're making progress.
But how do those internal teams find those priorities? Early on, we saw people being pulled off of cybersecurity to help the IT help desk get people connected because they were working from home. We saw them pulled away to set up containers full of laptops that were going to be shipped out to staff. That meant we missed a lot of early attacks. We also know that the response of the industry is typically reactive. Improvements in tools take time to come along. They take even longer before they're rolled out and deployed to staff. How does cybersecurity get those priorities and begin to address them?
Yeah, that's a hard question. I don't know if there's a great answer on that. For exactly what you said, combine the fact that we're in a more complicated world with the fact that we are distracted because people are stressing about the virus and that we have had to reorganize, reprioritize where we have security people doing IT jobs or other jobs in the company. We still have to find our sweet spot. We have to find the problems that we can manage that we think we can make progress on.
Let's take the example of BEC attacks that have been on the rise over the last few years. They exploit problems in the way people execute their internal processes, especially around finance. With people working from home, that communication between individuals and managers is broken. It opens the door for attackers to exploit. Are you seeing attackers identifying this and launching new attacks?
I think it's a good example of saying how the pandemic has changed the way people work. So if I'm working at home now and I used to sit in the office next to my boss, if I got an email saying transfer some funds or transfer some personnel records or something, worst case, I could walk next door and ask him, or I could yell through the wall or whatever made sense. People are working in environments, a lot of environments in which they're not comfortable. And there are a significant number of people right now working at home for the first time that have never done that. This really opens up a whole new ball game for BEC and individualistic attacks. Getting an email attack or a social engineering attack or something directed at an individual who is now in their home office, who 2 months ago they were in the office every day, is a dramatic shift in the way that person has to think and work. If you take someone, put them in an uncomfortable situation by working at home, add the stress of the pandemic, and now subject them to a stressful situation, because most BEC attacks are like, hey, this needs to be taken care of today. It's clearly an escalated problem where people are more vulnerable to that. From what we've seen in some of the attacks and some of the articles we've seen, we have definitely seen attackers focusing on that and understanding that attacking those people who are in uncomfortable situations is a big win. It's clearly a upgraded attack path for attackers, and I think they're taking advantage of it.
How do we improve user education at this time? We've personally seen probably 5 to 10 emails per person each week in our business telling us that our email accounts are suspended or email is being held and we need to log in to release it. We know it's fake because we talk to each other regularly over collaboration tools. My team asked me, hey, Ian, did you really send that? We can stop those kind of attacks. But that does not scale to an organization of 1,000, 2,000, 10,000, 15,000 plus people. What do we do to change user education?
Education is important in this context because really there's no better way to help ward these types of attacks. Unfortunately, we're in a problem where if people are otherwise doing their jobs, you have to be careful about how much education you plug people with. I think the best answer on that is what a lot of security geeks have said for years, Ian, is small doses. We have to keep reminding people PEC attacks are real. Here's what they look like. Here's what how to prevent them. Small doses. Here's what a phishing attack looks like. Here's how to prevent it. Small doses. Here's what an exploit kit might look like or a virus might look like. You have to keep reminding people on a pretty regular basis. Don't overwhelm them. You can't put people through 16 hours of training a week, but you can give them 5 minute, 7 minute, 10 minute snippets here and there to try to keep that on their foremind. And if you are seeing a BEC attack in your environment, share it with the entire company. Make sure that everybody knows that there have been things targeted at your organization. If I'm sitting here at Joe's Hat, Boot, and Shoe Factory, if I read an article about how Acme Insurance has been subjected to a BEC attack, I don't care as much. You tell me this other guy in Joe's Hat, Boot, and Shoe Factory has been hit by a BEC attack. That's a lot more personal. I'm going to pay a lot more attention to that if you can personalize it for me. The thing more than anything, Ian, is we have to keep chipping away at that awareness. It's got to be little bites back to people to help keep these things far enough forward in their minds that we have a chance of helping isolate these attacks and stop them, slow them down when they do come in.
Aren't customers using the corporate intranet for that, or are you seeing their employees doing that with collaboration tools? It's about spreading that knowledge quickly. Some companies have tried to use gamification for this, but the results have been indeterminate. Will we see more of this as companies review the lessons from this pandemic?
For the most part, what we've seen up front is organizations trying to emphasize that messaging from the organizational aspect. We have seen some of the collaborative effect, some of the interpersonal communication, intergroup communication. If I see a new email, I might ask somebody else or ask an internal forum and say, hey, did Joyce really ask for a copy of the personnel records or a copy of my salary actions for the year or something like that? We're seeing more of that. And I think to your point is the more of that we can do and encourage. And part of that might be the corporate message to increase that collaborative action. Now, that's one of the things I've made a point of saying, how do overall people adapt to the COVID pandemic is one of the biggest things we have to do is we have to keep communicating. Unfortunately, I think in a way we have to communicate more, and that may be overwhelming to people at some times, but we do have to keep talking about what we're seeing, what we're going through. If we're having problems, making sure we understand, we are saying, these are problems I'm having and why. Making sure that your coworkers, your organization are all on the same page as far as your level of awareness and your level of communication, and you have at least a baseline collaboration about how you can share and actively reach out to your other coworkers.
We've touched on the volume of attacks, but as the volume goes up, so does the amount of data from log files and other reporting systems. How overwhelmed are cybersecurity teams at the moment?
Yeah, I think in a lot of cases, Ian, a lot of the firms, a lot of the cybersecurity people we're seeing are incredibly overwhelmed. Combined with the problem you mentioned before, we've seen a lot of cybersecurity people being pulled into IT or other support jobs. We've seen huge increases of attacks in healthcare, as healthcare supply chain, manufacturing, transportation distribution, some of the more key industries. Someone who's working in healthcare who is already working in a organization where they always felt like they're behind their cybersecurity duties, and suddenly their attacks have doubled or tripled or quadrupled. There's no way around the fact that some of these people are going to feel and actually be inundated and overwhelmed. We have to make sure we're making the best use of what automation we have is one thing. And the second thing I mentioned earlier is we do have to prioritize. I mean, it's not an easy answer to say, I've got 17 alerts coming at me. How do I figure out which one of those alerts is the one I need to worry about first? I have to be disciplined is the best word I can think of right now to make sure that we, again, keep making progress and moving forward. It is definitely a problem in the types and scale of attacks and escalations we're seeing, that in areas of shrinking cybersecurity capabilities and increasing cybersecurity attacks, we have to figure out a way to balance those two things which contradict each other and keep things moving forward.
If we were dealing with an increase in phishing attacks or state actors simply trying to steal intellectual property, we could focus AI systems and automation on prioritizing those kinds of attacks. But we're not, and we're getting overwhelmed by so many different types of attacks. What opportunity does this create for attackers, and how do we review the integration of tools and the type of tools in use?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's kind of a catch-22 to the extent if you spend time focusing on the BEC attack, the brute force attack takes over. If you worry about the brute force attack, you may lose focus on someone trying to break your CMS or your Cold Fusion or Struts or whatever else on your external site. Unfortunately, it's kind of a fighting fires to some extent. I think it has to earn. I think it has to help prioritize what we do with our alerts and that we're processing the volume of information we're getting from our systems. To the extent, my best answer is going to be to automate the management and escalation of events and security issues. A person cannot manually deal with everything we're seeing. The more you can automate the assistance of that, the better off you're going to be as far as managing the volume of the types of things we're seeing. If you have the capability of a managed service company or an outsourced company to help you prioritize, that is a good way to say, I'm going to get good bang for the buck because I might have a hard time looking at 1,000 things and picking out the three things that are important. That's what the other companies do full time. If they can make it so that I don't have to look at 1,000, I have to look at 3, that is potentially a good use of your resource time to say, how do I prioritize and how do I automate the ability of myself to take lots of information and make that something I can actually manage, make it bite-size.
We've seen an increase in ransomware as a service, malware as a service over the last few years. People don't want to get their hands dirty, but they're quite happy to let other people do it and just take a fee. We currently have a lot of people sitting at home. Many are unemployed and disgruntled. There are those who have time and access and who perhaps feel that they're owed. It's a very fertile market for recruiters in cybercrime groups. Are you seeing any evidence that these recruiters are pulling people in and that they're ramping up their as-a-service offerings?
With the volumes we've seen shifting in some of the attack types, now, I couldn't say if it is hostile groups recruiting and successfully expanding their capability because of the attacker, the people they've recruited, or if it is idle hands, make the devil's work type thing, and people are sitting at home, they have nothing else to do. And so they say, yeah, I'm going to do this. I'm out of a job. I need to make money, so I'm doing something different to help make money. I read an article a while back on a girl who got really into Zoom bombing to the point where she was getting a lot of hits. She was getting Instagram. She made it real popular. She was on a lot of sites as a lead. She started Zoom bombing because she had been in school and her school closed. So she went home and finished her studies and everything by noon. And she was bored. She just started doing Zoom bombing just for something to do because she was bored. We are definitely seeing at least some of that effect of people saying, I've got time on my hands. I'm bored. And like you say, some of that is I need a way to make some income. We have definitely seen some shift towards people who may have not otherwise been in the circle taking advantage of the situation.
One of the things we've seen is a lot of free education suddenly being offered around cybersecurity, much of which is being targeted at school children and teenagers. It's an opportunity for them to learn a skill for the future, and we need to attract that talent. How optimistic are you that if we look forward 5, 8, 10 years, we will see talent inspired during this pandemic to become defenders?
Everything we've seen suggests to me that we are seeing migrations of people into this industry. I've talked to some younger people, and they're interested in working in cybersecurity, partially because they think it's a good opportunity for jobs that they can get into quickly and have the chance for some growth, where a lot of industries aren't necessarily growing as fast. The challenge right now is getting people, it's a focus issue, right? If I was in school and I was working on an IT or an InfoSec degree, it's a matter of that the focus of that person and their ability to say, I'm going to keep doing my education. I'm going to keep focused on learning what I can learn. With the pandemic, there are going to be a significant amount of those people who are going to let their studies slide, who are going to fall off. I mean, if I can log on and play Call of Duty instead of watching videos and practicing Python coding, I'm going to open up the assault rifle and shoot bad guys. I think we're probably seeing that problem now. I think the challenge moving forward is whether that escalation, that migration or evolution into cybersecurity is going to grow enough to keep up. I don't have an answer for that one. I hope so. I'm guessing we are going to see enough of an influx into the industry, or we are seeing enough of an influx into industry, that we're going to see some of those positions fill out in areas that we had not seen before. but that's just kind of guessing based on the people I've talked to and the trends I've seen overall.
We've seen a lot of professionalism within cybercrime groups over the last 2, 3, 5 years in particular, to the point where sometimes it can be difficult to differentiate the cybercrime group from a state-sponsored actor. If you look at the attacks against R&D, intellectual property, ransomware against healthcare, both groups have a reason to be involved. Are you seeing integration between those cybercrime groups and those state actors?
For a while now, we've seen a lot more professionalism and a tendency of crime groups to run their crime business as a business. It's almost like tracking return on investment, which products give them the most bang for the buck. When ransomware was raking in the dough, the group shifted towards ransomware. When coin mining was raking in the dough, group shifted towards coin mining, and so forth. We've seen for a while the development of better business controls and better business processes amongst crime groups and their focus and ability to conduct research and development and integrate product development and product support and testing. We have also seen some of these crime groups coordinate tools. One group might say, you know what, you got a way to spread internally, but I've got a good way to get in. If we team up our attacks, we can share the spoils of those riches when we get through. We've seen some of that over the last year and a half or so, relatively recently in the scheme of cybersecurity. It's hard to prove a hard connection between nation state actors and crime groups. We have seen indications in some places that nation state actors and crime groups are using some common technology, attacks and techniques, and focusing on carbon targets. We've seen areas where what used to be a nation state victim or profile or target suite is suddenly being attacked by crime groups or vice versa. Like the crime group said, hey, you know, I've got everything I want out of this. I'm going to sell or give the rights to further investigation of that attack or that victim to someone else. We've definitely seen a shift. Is it an earthquake? Is it a complete mindset change? I don't think we've seen that yet. I don't think we've seen it now. We've seen indications that there's more spreading amongst groups, and we've seen indications there's more sharing target and attack information between nation state and crime groups. I think it's a trend. I wouldn't say right now from what we've seen is a change in the world.
The current focus seems to be on COVID-19 and healthcare, but at some point, we're all going to go back to work. Crime groups and nation-state attackers can't attack manufacturing supply chains at the moment because they're almost completely shut down. When they do open up, there's going to be an opportunity for them to pivot their current range of attacks. Are you seeing cybercrime groups and nation-state actors planning, rehearsing, and practicing techniques for the future?
That's a good question. I think we've seen some indications that the non-actors or the secondary targets or the non-primary targets are still seeing activity. Some of those attacks are somewhat different. What we're seeing is the continued volume of attacks across all industries. The way those attacks are happening right now suggests that if I'm looking at attacking a manufacturing company or transport and distribution or someone else, maybe I'm not looking at breaking them now, stealing all their data and getting out. Maybe what I'm looking at is how do I get in and stay there and hang out for 2, 3, 4, 6 months in the future when that company is more active, has ramped up production and is rolling again at full steam. I've already got my footprint in there. I've already got a way to extract their data and do what I need to quickly. We've definitely seen indications that that's going on. If you look at the types of attacks that happened, web application attacks and application-specific attacks accounted for about 55% of all attacks we saw in 2019. In 2018, that was 32% of all attacks. Think about what those attacks are focusing on. Those attacks tend to focus on websites, external web presence of organizations. Where is the biggest growth in companies right now? It's in the web presence of those organizations who are doing things like more online sales, setting up web portals to communicate more effectively with companies, to conduct telehealth, to do more online sales where maybe I had a brick and mortar store only and now I'm doing store sales. Maybe it was a restaurant that only did in-store sales and now I've got a website that I go through that helped me do online ordering for pickup or for delivery. We've seen a shift. Part of that is we've seen a shift of companies using more web, a stronger web presence. Meanwhile, we already know attackers are already attacking the web presence of those organizations. That's another evil circle where we're seeing attackers attacking what we're using more of. It breeds a scenario in which the attacker has a chance to create a better footprint and grab hold of an internal environment, get a foothold in someone's organization. And then, as you kind of suggested, Ian, maybe in 4 months and sometime in the future, when I am rolling at full speed and I got my production lines going again, now you're going to break out that ransomware attack or the Nephilim attack and lock up all my information. We sent some indication that is working. We also have the expectation that that is what attackers are doing to extend beyond the pandemic and extend the life of their attack profiles.
Many of those companies going to the web for the first time or moving to make sales via the web are small to mid-sized enterprises. They're not the ones who would typically sign deals with MSS organizations. Where do they get the right level of support? It's a massively underserved portion of the market because the skills really aren't there. And as you just said, these people are easy targets.
We'd actually seen a shift of attackers into small, medium-sized businesses. I mean, not a earth-shaking shift, like a 90% shift. We have seen a migration into small, medium-sized businesses for quite a while now. If you are a small or medium-sized business and you're venturing into opportunities and environments where you are not used to working, like maybe you have a website or you're outsourcing some capabilities where you had not before, I think it's important as one of the things as you find those capabilities that you make sure you're finding vendors who can provide some of those services for you. If I'm in a restaurant and I'm going to start selling online so I can do pickup orders, I'm not just going to go to Joe's Hat Boot and Shoe Factory web online web ordering system. I'm going to find a company that can provide my online ordering and provide some of that security functionality for me. If I'm doing outsourced data, say I need to expand my data or my internet capabilities, I'm going to make sure I find a outsourcer, an IT provider, or a bandwidth provider that can provide some of those online security functions for me so that I don't have to manage all that and increase my business and increase my footprint, adding a bigger web presence. I'm adding more website capabilities. I'm adding more retail capabilities. I'm adding a lot of capabilities, but I'm probably not adding a lot of staff right now to support that. The way to manage that for these companies that are growing some of those capabilities in this area right now is to make sure that as you expand those capabilities, you're making sure you identify providers that can provide at least some of those services for you and do the things we talked about before. Prioritize that information, prioritize your issues, and shrink the amount of information that you have to worry about. I don't want to worry about 1,000 things from my online provider. I want to worry about 3. If your provider can help you do that, that's a win for you and for them.
As an organization, you have access to the NTT Communications team data feed, which covers around 40% of global internet traffic. Historically, it's enabled you to spot attacks when they've hit one region and put into place remediation before they spill over around the world. The current pandemic and cyber attacks haven't given you time to analyze and put in those remediation plans. How much has that shaped how you now view threat intelligence as you get hold of it, and how you then respond and push it to your clients?
It's a shift in the way the information comes in. We may have previously seen escalation attacks that are happening in Eastern Europe. We could evolve into an attack, a monitoring or security intelligence, telling other clients this is coming. That basic map, the basic footprint or process of how we identify those attacks, that's not changed dramatically. What we're seeing is more of the dynamic level of those issues. We might see a new outbreak of Dark Nexus or TrickBot or LokiBot, and those tend to, historically, not happening globally. We tend to see a lot of Nephilim attacking technical industries and healthcare in the United States and Europe. We can take that information, we compare what we're seeing in the United States, compare what we're seeing in Europe, see what are common in those, and we can apply protections and apply threat intelligence and apply what I'm seeing in those areas to Asia Pacific, to Australia, to Africa, South America, to Canada, and what I saw in Europe, I can apply to the United States. What I saw in the United States, I can apply to Europe. It requires that to be a little bit more focused and a little bit more dynamic because, as you mentioned, we're seeing a higher sustained level of new things faster. Where we saw a escalation of attacks in Eastern Europe on Monday, we had till Friday to say it's not spreading into the United States until later in the week. Now we're seeing something pops up on Monday, something pops up on Tuesday, sometimes something pops up on Tuesday afternoon. the probably focus would be a little bit more dynamic on the way we adapt and share our information and prioritize our information internally. The model hasn't changed. It's just the adaptability and the speed with which we conduct that model on sharing information, sharing our detections and manage that information has probably had to be a little bit more adaptable.
We've talked about how attack surfaces are changing, how attacking groups are changing the way they behave, and the need to set priorities to deal with more complex attacks in the future. What do you expect to see the industry having to deal with in a year's time? And what would you say to a group of CISOs who are looking for guidance?
One thing we're seeing as we've seen attacks go through the cycle from December, January up till now, is we've seen a conglomeration of attacks. We've seen big attacks, scattered attacks, kind of shotgun, chaff in the wind type of attacks, turn into more focus attacks. We've seen attacks consolidate into more multi-vector attacks. If I had to give any particular thing about what we should watch out for, is some of what we talked about before. Just because you are seeing a BEC attack or a brute force attack, don't let yourself tunnel vision in on a specific vector. Understand that this is a new world for attackers and a new world for organizations. Understand that attacks tend to not be single vector. If you are getting a dedicated attack, you are likely to undergo a broad spectrum of attacks. You're going to see malware, you're going to see internal attacks, you're going to see external attacks. You may see attacks against your vendor and your supply chain. Be aware of the big picture. Don't let yourself tunnel vision. As far as what advice I would give to a CISO, I'd say that kind of thing as well. Be aware that attacks are coming at a greater rate or greater sense of focus than we've seen in some of the other scenarios. I would not be at all surprised if that continued, a dedicated long-term multi-vector attacks. It's a trend we've seen for a while where malware's been combined and we've seen exploit kits get more complex. We've seen malware become multifunction malware. It used to be just a ransomware. Well, now you've got a malware, maybe a ransomware, a coin miner, and a keyboard logger all in one piece of malware. We're going to see those things escalate and get more complicated. For how does a CISO identify and deal with that? First of all, understand how it's happening. Second thing is, I mentioned, prioritize what your biggest bang security protections are. Third thing is what we've already talked about, communication, collaboration, and we can do that within our own companies, making sure that if I see a BEC attack or if I've gotten a hostile email with attachments, I'm going to share it with my company. One of the messages we have to do here, one of the collaboration goals we need to strive for is I'm not just going to share it with my coworkers. I'm going to share it with other people as well. I'm going to share it with other companies and saying, oh, yeah, here's this new BEC attack or this new type of attack I've seen. I think we need to make sure we are collaborating outside of our individual companies to the wider industry, the cybersecurity industry, and our peers in industries to say that if I'm going through this, you are likely to go through this as well. If we can do that, that's probably our biggest bang for the buck on helping slow down the ability of attackers to spread.
I think it's going to be interesting to see what the industry looks like in 6 months, let alone 2 years' time. John, thank you for today.
You're very welcome.